The Children's Commissioner is again calling on the police to end the practice of pursuing young drivers. It comes after the Independent Police Conduct Authority found the police were not justified in carrying out a pursuit in Christchurch and said that it should have been abandoned. The crash killed 64-year-old Kaiapoi man Kenneth McCall, whose husband Owen Fraser says the police did the right thing and that it's up to the fleeing driver to stop. And Children's Commissioner Judge Andrew Beecroft joins me now. Tēnā koe, Judge Beecroft.
Tēnā koe.
You think the police should not chase young drivers. What should they do then?
Well, let's say, first of all, this was a tragedy, and it's clear from the Police Conduct Authority report it was avoidable. What they should do is, unless there is grave danger or homicide at risk, they should pull out, abandon, and almost always they can catch and hold the young person to account the next morning. Good police techniques, modern policing can do that. After all, young people normally drive home. The police can catch them pretty easily. I used to think, in fact, you know, Karen, that the opposite was the case. They should always trace. The law shouldn't be mocked. Young people should be held to account. But I've changed my mind simply because the risks are too high. Too many people are dying. Too many innocent people, too many children and young people in cars are dying. Children and young people make reckless, irresponsible, stupid decisions under pressure. Sometimes the whole purpose is to lure the police into the chase. We can do much better. And I think too often it's all accelerator and no handbrake, literally. And we've got to have a change.
Yeah, do you think that across all the ages, not just young drivers, just police chases just should stop?
You know, I can only speak as Children's Commissioner. That's under 18. I think there's something about the chase generally where, under pressure, everybody can easily make bad decisions in the spur of the moment. And time again, we've seen that. But particularly where there are many children or young people in the car, they egg each other on. All the overseas studies show the risk trebles or quadruples when there's a group of children or young people in the car. And sometimes for some of the most minor offences, and it just gets out of hand and it escalates. In this case, it's clear the suggestion is from the authority doing the investigation, and it's a strong report. It was actually the chase that could well have made the driving worse. If we'd stopped and pulled out, lives would have been saved. Easy to say, and I don't want to be critical of those involved, when I know how difficult it is for the police. But the Queensland approach is a good one. Don't chase unless it's really, really necessary. And in Queensland, deaths and injuries just dropped like a stone as a result of not having police chases.
Have you had a chance to talk to the Commissioner of Police, Andrew Costa, about this at all?
Yeah, in fact, the previous commissioner, I did, and I'm on a working group, and the police are taking it seriously. I mean, I've got to say that. They're concerned. The top brass and police know that it's an issue. Tweaks are being made all the time. Better training, better techniques, better instructions for those in the command centres. But frankly, I think we've got to the stage now where a fundamental change in the starting point has got to take place. As I say, unless it's really grave and serious, and where we suspect or know it's children, we just don't start in the first place. And we can catch them later, and they can be held to account, and they should be, make no mistake, but not at the risk of death or serious injury.
What's the argument coming from the police for police chases?
Yeah, I think you'd probably have to speak to them. I think there's maybe a reluctance to feel that young people and children, quote, get away with it, end quote. And I think there's a real belief that with good risk-averse decision-making, that potential death and injury will be reduced. But I do think we're asking an awful lot of human beings under pressure to make good decisions. And we can almost guarantee that when there are groups of children and young people in a car, they won't make good decisions. So sometimes the courageous, the brave thing for the police to do is to stop. And I don't think it's weak. You know, it's not being soft. It's just saying there's a better way and lives can be preserved.
And you know, you can always take the licence plate number and follow up them the next day.
Exactly. In most urban centres, there are cameras. There's good comms. There's a quick identification of where as to who the owner of the car is can usually be done pretty quickly. Doesn't have to be done spur of the moment at 150k through a central city suburban suburb.
Andrew, let's take this opportunity on another subject to talk about your editorial in the New Zealand Association for Research in Education. It's entitled, COVID is a reason to do more, not less, for our children. Can you give us a bit of a summation of what that's about?
Yeah, I think not much work's being done on the effect of COVID on under 18-year-olds. But what's clear is that it has amplified or made worse the situation for those who were already doing it tough. It's a load that's not being equally shared and disproportionately shouldered on at least the 10% who were really doing it tough beforehand. I think COVID's a chance to do more and to go harder and to use some of our surplus on children and families that are really struggling. And I think we've got an unparalleled opportunity to sort of right the wrongs of the last 30 years when child poverty suddenly appeared, really since the mother of all budgets. That's when it started. If we were committed and we had the will to do it, and COVID presents the opportunity, we could fix it pretty quickly. I'm glad the government has that halving child poverty in 10 years' time. With the real will, we could do it quicker. But I'm glad the issue's on the radar and it seems to be a cross-party agreement. That's good. But make no mistake, COVID's been tough, especially on about 100,000 kids, and it's really amplified their problems.
What are the challenges that have happened this year specifically for children?
Well, I think I could name three. There are many. We've heard, especially in South Auckland, of senior secondary school students not coming back to school after COVID, but getting jobs to help families that are struggling where parents have lost a job, or to be babysitters for younger children so that parents can go to different jobs during school hours. I mean, fantastic, isn't it, that kids would commit themselves to families and Pacific families to their ainga to support and to be part of the collective. And what a great sacrifice and I guess love for their family, kids are showing that. But it is foreclosing on long-term education. We know education's a circuit breaker. And I just think it's sad that they're really having to choose between education and a future and supporting a struggling family. And there are schools in South Auckland where they report 10%+ of their senior students in that position. We were concerned that abuse and neglect might increase during COVID. We were never sure what was going on. The concept of the bubble was okay, but it wasn't transparent. We couldn't really penetrate into the family home to know what was going on. I was recently with the police senior child abuse investigators who said they're already starting to see now the numbers coming through of increased abuse and neglect. I mean, that's not a scientific study, but that's the concern and experience of senior police. Another example, the digital divide, so-called. I mean, that 10% I talked about frequently can't access social media or the internet. Now, schools and the ministry did a great job in transferring learning to the internet at home. But for those 10%, they really struggled. It was much harder for them to engage in that learning, despite efforts by the ministry. It all goes to show that, I mean, many of our kids prospered and benefited during COVID. They had more time with their family. They spoke about that. But some felt more isolated, more marginalised, more alienated. And I guess that's what I mean. Those who were already struggling, it became worse for them.
And what about the children that you come into contact with on a daily basis, I should imagine, being the Children's Commissioner? What have they said to you personally about this year?
Yeah. Well, actually, we've got a report coming out and it just speaks of the duality of experience. As I say, there are many who said they loved spending time with mum and dad and with their family. They really enjoyed it. Some even said they wished they could have continued the living at home because it was something that was good. And paradoxically, there's been a study of parents who said the same thing. So, I mean, that's a positive about it. we know there were some upsides that weren't expected. Less disease amongst children. Some of the more serious communicable diseases have just about stopped this year. And paediatricians say that was a totally unexpected and unlooked-for positive result of COVID.
Gee, are we talking like measles and things like that?
I think that's the case. Yeah. I haven't got the exact diseases, but they've said some you would think had almost eradicated or died out. But it shows you how being at home and not being in big groups has had an unexpected, perhaps, upside. But we've also heard from kids who felt lonely, who felt it really hard to, and where things have been tough at home, hard to engage with friends, hard to be with social support groups. They've found it lonely and isolating. So there's been that difference of experience, and I think you can't say the experience for all children's been the same.
No, very good. Thank you very, very much. It's great to talk to you tonight.
Thanks, Karen. Yes, appreciated it.
That's Judge Andrew Beecroft, the Children's Commissioner.